Oakley Shelton Thomas is a researcher at Food and Water Watch and lead author of the report Fracking Endgame, which was released June 3rd. We're joined also by Allison Grass, who is the research director for Food and Water Watch. Just to clarify, so fracking is producing more gas than consumers in the U.S. can use. So that is causing the gas industry to lose money, even as they're investing hundreds of billions of dollars into new infrastructure. And the way that they're trying to fix that or correct for that is by exporting gas to raise prices in the U.S. and by sending gas to the plastics market.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Fracking has produced more gas than they can profitably sell. So they're looking to new markets through exports in order to sell the gas abroad at higher prices and new sources of unnecessary demand like plastics in order to prop up those prices and to make their investments profitable.
So let's talk about New York. The ban for fracking in New York was a big victory 5 years ago. Can you explain how Food and Water Watch contributed to that victory?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge victory. Food and Water Watch helped mobilize real people, regular people on the ground to build power and to show and demonstrate our power and hold elected officials accountable, specifically Governor Cuomo, and hold them accountable to that promise. And it was a sustained fight and effort to make that happen. Ultimately, it led to the banning of fracking in New York. But it's sort of ironic now because even though New York has banned fracking, infrastructure projects that use fracked gas from other sites, from other states, are still being developed in New York. So those need to stop to really make good on the promise to ban fracking.
So that leads into my next question. Can you outline some of the key battles? How many new gas plants are we seeing across the country?
So there are 364 new gas plants that are sort of in the works, and those are at various stages, but they're being developed or they're proposed or they're planned. And by no means will all of these gas plants get built, and we want ideally to stop as many of them as we possibly can. And several of those are getting built in New York. Among those, one that comes to mind immediately is the Danskammer Power Plant, which people in Food and Water Watch is organizing to stop. And there are two other plants in the Hudson River Valley that we're organizing against as well.
Is there any way that local citizens in New York can get involved with this fight?
Definitely. People can go to our website at foodandwaterwatch.org and reach out to our organization about getting involved in volunteering.
So let's talk about the major hub that is proposed in the Appalachian area in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. Is there, if any, opposition or organizing are we seeing against this hub?
Hi, so I'm going to chime in here. So the Appalachian Storage Hub is kind of like the cornerstone project to a greater petrochemical build-out being proposed for the tri-state area of Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, possibly Kentucky. Basically, what's happening is the industry in that area is wanting to turn that region of Appalachia and the Ohio River Valley into the next Houston or the next Cancer Alley. There is a lot of movement going on right now amongst organizations there and national organizations to stop both the Appalachian Storage Hub and regional petrochemical facilities that it would be interconnected to.
So they want to invest billions and billions of dollars in this hub that would cause compounding pollution, according to your report. But how financially stable is this industry?
So the interesting thing about this that I want to point out is the Appalachian Storage Hub, the company behind it that's trying to get it built, they're actually seeking a $1.9 billion loan guarantee from the Department of Energy, which basically means they're looking for taxpayers to fund a polluting piece of infrastructure that's just going to wreak more havoc upon an area that's already very industrialized and has bared the brunt of industrial pollution and pollution from natural resource extraction.
You mentioned tax breaks. The report also mentions eminent domain used to get the natural resources needed for these hubs. What are the justifications for these tax breaks and these policies?
Well, so the tax breaks happen a lot of the time because municipalities that approve the building of these power plants specifically, but also other petrochemical facilities, liquefaction terminals less so because they might be more site-specific, compete against each other to be the host of these, and then they essentially get into bidding wars like we saw with Amazon's HQ2, where they hand out increasingly large tax breaks in order to attract these facilities to their area. The justification is often that they'll create jobs, that it's sort of an immediate win that politicians can point to, that they sort of did something. But obviously the costs are down the line. The costs are borne by the municipalities having weakened tax bases and having to deal with the burden of this pollution. In terms of eminent domain, the justification part is even shakier, because ostensibly eminent domain should be used when there's a public interest justification in using private property for public interest. But pipelines like the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and the Mariner East 2 Pipeline are using eminent domain for private gain, that they're using the power of the state to steal private property. I mean, they're compensating them, but they're taking it against their will in order to build these facilities that produce massive profits for corporations.
Your report mentions that usually communities are actually against having these facilities built, and that more than half of Americans agree that fracking should be banned. So where is the community voice in this conversation?
So the community voice is often overwhelmed by profit motives and the influence of large money. And this can be particularly extreme in conditions where communities are already marginalized and excluded from the political process. Lots of these facilities are getting built in areas that have already experienced the brunt of lots of industrial pollution and tend to be marginalized. They tend to be low income and have higher percentages of people of color in them. And typically these communities that have less political power are not able to stop the facilities from getting built in them.
The conclusion of the report is clear. Stopping dirty infrastructure now is the only way to avoid a fracked future. What are some of the steps that need to be taken to halt this fracking boom?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen is we need a national ban on fracking. Regulated fracking is a farce. It doesn't work. We've seen that demonstrated time and time again. There's still bad public health outcomes, local pollution. Regulated fracking has never proven successful. The other thing is that every infrastructure fight matters, that we need to stop all of these facilities from getting built, and each one of them gets built means more fracking, more local pollution, more climate pollution, more pipelines, and more attendant infrastructure that supports them. So that's really critical. And then we also need systemic change to transition towards real solutions like clean renewable energy backed up by storage.
So what are some of the ways that Food and Water Watch organizes and mobilizes communities to prevent these facilities from being built and this infrastructure from being built?
So we build people power to challenge profitable companies and to fight back against the power that money can have over politics and hold elected officials accountable. That means bringing people together and then demonstrating the power once we've built that. And that takes a lot of specific forms in these infrastructure fights, whether that means denying specific permits or passing legislation that creates broader mandates about the type of infrastructure that can or can't get built, or about passing legislation that mandates transitions towards green energy.
So if an individual like myself, just a private citizen, wants to get involved in this action, wants to get involved with Food and Water Watch, what are some steps that I can take?
People should reach out to Food and Water Watch, go to our website at foodandwaterwatch.org, but they should also contact their Congress people and ask their candidates running for office tough questions about climate change, about fracking, and about the infrastructure that they will and won't support, and then hold them accountable to those promises. And build power in their communities to fight back against the infrastructure and against fracking.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. This report has been very eye-opening, and it is so important to get this knowledge out there. Is there anything else, Allison and Oakley, that you want to add before we go?
I don't think so, but thank you so much for speaking with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
This has been part two of the report, Fracking Endgame, with Oakley Shelton Thomas and Allison Grass of Food and Water Watch in D.C. For Hudson Mohawk Magazine, I'm Alexis Goldsmith.